Hello, this is Alton Banks from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I will be reading to you from the Triangle Business Journal. Today's program is generously underwritten by Brian Lee Funeral Homes, located in Raleigh, Garner, and Anger. They can be reached at 919-832-8225. They believe every life is unique and deserves to be honored so that every funeral is as unique and special as a person it represents. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Now we open the pages of this week's Triangle Business Journal, and inside, as usual, is the biz page. So here we have a quick glance at some things happening in the Triangle. And under the heading of New Digs comes the article, New Location for Well-Known Shop. A well-known Raleigh antique store has jumped to a new location as a traditionally industrial part of Raleigh continues a dramatic evolution. Acquisitions Limited was a staple of Five Points for 28 years before owner Ross Spain moved the shop to a bigger location at 1930 Wake Forest Road, right across the road from Snoopy's and in a former Gulf Oil distribution center that dates from the 1920s. It's a pretty cool building, Spain says. The move gives Acquisitions 8,000 square feet of space and allows it to integrate its shop, warehouse, and Thomas Ard's art studio. It also positions it next to the new Bowstrings Pizza and Brew Yard in an area that has sprung to life in recent years. Nearby is Dock 1053, the McNeil Point development, and shops such as the Fab Foo, an electric furniture and gift shop, and the Dancing Moon Books and Gifts. We wanted to be close to where we were, and we wanted to be in a vibrant area, Spain says, and this area is up and coming. And in a rather sad moment, in memoriam to Judd Ammons. The article is entitled, Remembering the Life of a Prolific Triangle Developer. A legendary developer who made a long-term impact on the Triangle has died. Judd Ammons passed away October the 18th at the age of 85, according to his obituary. He grew up on a farm in western North Carolina, came to Raleigh to study at NC State University. The arc of Ammons' career would trace the growth of Raleigh, as he always had a keen sense of where the market was moving. He developed Springmore and the Heritage Golf Course in Wake Forest, among other projects. Ammons was a major benefactor of both NC State and Meredith College, where his wife, Jo Ellen, studied. He also had a keen sense of humor. Over his desk, he had a sign that read, "Let me do all the talking. It saves time." And under the heading of Reprising Role comes the article, Advance Auto Parts Lands a Star for Its Ad. Nearly a year after acquiring the Die Hard Batteries brand, Raleigh-based Advance Auto Parts has added a cool pitchman, Bruce Willis. Advance Auto has launched ads in which Willis once again plays Detective John McClane, the main character in the Die Hard series of action movies that began in 1988. The ads debuted on the Fox NFL broadcast October 18. In the ad, which features other original characters from the series, McClane has a dead car battery and heads to an Advance Auto store where he is soon confronted by bad guys before grabbing his fresh battery and escaping. Ad Age reports that Advance Auto isn't saying how much it spent on the ad, which was led by the marketing arm. I've never done any sort of commercial with the John McClane character, but Advance Auto Parts brought an idea to integrate Die Hard the Battery into the Die Hard story through a short film that's authentic to McClane and both brands, Willis said in a statement. Advance approached this like a motion picture. The script is clever, the production intense, and the spot is entertaining. Also on the Viz page, we find the under the heading TV Shuffle comes the article, WRAL shuffles anchor crews as Brown departs. Lena Tillett is getting a higher profile role at WRAL as the station alters its lineup with Catherine Brown about to exit. Brown is leaving the station as of November the 27th to spend more time with her family. Beginning November the 30th, Tillett will anchor WRAL News at 4 p.m., 5:30 p.m., and 10 p.m., along with station veteran Gerald Owens. Tillett joined the station in 2016. WRAL says weekend anchor Micaiah Thurmond will shift to a full-day weekday role. The station plans to hire a new weekend anchor to fill Thurmond's slot. And under the heading of dual degree comes the article, Raleigh Schools Partner on Path to Law Degree. Two Raleigh higher education institutions are coming together to get law students through both their undergraduate and law school in just 6 years. Campbell University Law School in downtown Raleigh and William Peace University have announced a partnership to create a dual degree option for students looking to earn their undergraduate and Juris Doctor degrees. Under the 3+3 dual degree program, students can spend 3 years at William Peace and 3 years at Campbell Law to earn both degrees. Typically, the process would take 4, but under the partnership, students complete their senior year credits for their undergraduate degree during the first year at Campbell's 3-year law program. This is a unique pathway for the top Peace students to focus on law school early in their collegiate careers, says Campbell Law Dean Rich Leonard. Students are eligible to earn a range of majors during the program, including BAs in criminal justice, political science, and pre-law. The partnership marks the newest 3+3 program for Campbell, which has similar arrangements with Meredith College, Salem College, Methodist University, and offers one for Campbell undergraduates. And finally, from the Biz page comes the heading Fresh Approach. And the article is, NC Museum of Art opens up, but with a twist. The North Carolina Museum of Art is back open for visitors, and the galleries are displaying a new and novel approach to the museum's vast collection. Most public museums are essentially a survey of the evolution of art, where patrons can trace the evolution of art by flowing from the Egyptian to Greek to Middle Ages and Impressionist and then the modern era. The North Carolina Museum has been blessed with a fantastic European collection and had in recent years added to its modern collection and African American art. Generally, of course, the works are grouped with others from a similar time period. But under Valerie Hillings, who was named director in November of 2018, the museum exploring new relationships between the work. So a modern portrait by Kehinde Wiley of an African-American dressed in echoes of European royalty is paired with traditional portraits from centuries ago. And a modern landscape is hung above 3 traditional landscapes. Curators at the NCMA are invigorating the galleries through a series of artwork conversation notes assigned in the collection. Themes to be explored include gender and racial identity, the tendency to favor Western countries in art history, geographical barriers, the traditional versus the contemporary, and the abstract versus the figurative. Interesting approach, and one that certainly shakes up the familiar walls and works of the North Carolina Museum of Art. Now we turn the page to the On Tech and Airlines column by Lauren Honasurge. And the big article on the page is Cree's Sale Opens Doors. After announcing the divestment of Cree's LED business to Smart Global Holdings and its subsidiary, Chile Acquisition, in a deal worth up to $300 million, Greg Lowe said not to expect a stream of pink slips in Durham because of it. Instead, by focusing on its core business, the Wolfspeed semiconductor unit, the Durham company will be better able to tackle the $10 billion opportunity ahead, one driven by the electric vehicle industry, he said. And it could actually mean growth for the company in its hometown. In an exclusive video conference interview from Germany, Lowe said he expected few synergies in the form of headcount reductions, as Smart does not yet have an LED business. From a technology and a business perspective, the folks that are in the LED business will be moving over to Smart, he says. I would anticipate the synergies would be relatively small in terms of headcount reductions. The number of Durham employees that will be transitioning to Smart through the deal is 275, according to Cree. And Smart, which does not have a Durham presence today, will be temporarily leasing space from Cree so it continue to base the business locally. From a manufacturing perspective, it doesn't really change anything because we were already heading to a fabless model for our LED business, Lowe said, noting that as part of that transition, fab operations were being shifted to Wolfspeed in Durham. The deal, which includes a $50 million payment in cash, as well as an unsecured promissory note to Cree in the amount of $125 million, is expected to close in the first quarter of 2021. The $125 million note, according to a securities filing, comes with the potential for Cree to receive an earn-out payment of up to $125 million based on the revenue and gross profit performance of the LED business in the first four full fiscal quarters after the deal closes. And also on this page, we find the heading RDU, and the article is, Airport Approves Aggressive Incentives Program to Lure International Flights. Raleigh-Durham International Airport has approved what officials hope will be aggressive incentives intended to both recruit new flight service and to bring back international routes that were suspended amid the pandemic. In all, the airport has capped the incentives, which include landing fee waivers at $1.7 million. The goal, said Kenneth Strickland, Director of Air Service Development, is to help RDU maintain its competitive stature in the air service world. Much of the program was specifically tailored to secure the return of four international flights: American Airlines service to London, Delta Airlines service to Paris, and Air Canada's service to Montreal and Toronto. While both American and Delta have announced plans to bring back the London and Paris flights respectively, Strickland said it's hardly a done deal. He points out that airlines put flights on the schedule, and then, if demand doesn't warrant the service, routes can still be delayed, something American confirms happened with its London flight. The service was initially scheduled to return this fall, but the airline said recently that demand had changed and the flight is now planned for spring, around the time Delta plans to bring back its nonstop flight to Paris. Strickland told the board that a spring return for both flights is probably optimistic given current demand, despite what the airlines are saying. He said to expect a smaller industry next year, which will mean more competition for flight service. As far as luring the four international flights in question to return, the incentive being offered is 1 year of landing fee waivers, running through October 31st of 2022. RDU expects the program to cost up to $652,620, although it's approved a spending cap of $700,000. The program also includes incentives for new flight service. Domestic flights would have to commit to twice-weekly flight service for at least 6 months. New international service would be required to take off at least once weekly for 3 months. New flight service would be entitled to landing fee waivers, with the program capped at $1 million. Traffic at RDU has yet to recover from the pandemic. Recent numbers show that through September, nearly 1.9 million passengers boarded planes at RDU. By this point last year, that number was nearly 5.3 million. Thus, a 64.2% decline. And with this article is a short, small graph that compares the five largest carriers through September in terms of emplaned passengers for 2019 and 2020. So Delta Airlines had roughly 526,000 passengers in 2020, compared to the 1.62 million in 2019. American Airlines in 2020 had about 500,000, compared to 1,185,000 in 2019. Southwest Airlines, about 380,000 for 2020, compared to 955,000 for the previous year. United Airlines in 2020 had 206,000 folks, whereas in 2020 that number was closer to 610,000. Finally, Frontier Airlines in 2020 had roughly 93,000 passengers, and the previous year around 389,000 passengers. Next, we turn to the healthcare page of this week's Triangle Business Journal, and we find the lead article. Here's the state's plan to vaccinate its residents. The state has officially submitted its vaccination plan to the federal government, laying out its strategy and priorities for the rollout of a COVID-19 drug. The North Carolina Department of Health and Human Services, sometimes known by the acronym NCDHHS, submitted its plan to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, or CDC. The 140-page plan details everything the state will need to do to mobilize a vaccine once it is approved by federal regulators, including the storage, distribution, and oversight of the vaccine. The plan also lays out priorities for who will be first granted access to a vaccine, something it notes will be necessary due to both the scale of immunizing the state's entire population and the limited supply of a vaccine. Once the Food and Drug Administration authorizes a vaccine, it will take time for manufacturers to ramp up production, NCDHHS noted. Therefore, states will receive limited vaccine supplies at the start and will need to determine which populations receive the vaccine first. According to the report, the state's planning a four-phase rollout of its efforts, starting with the most critical populations before moving to the general population. In the first phase, the report states that healthcare providers at high risk for exposure, those who are vital to the initial COVID vaccine administration efforts, and staff in long-term care will be prioritized first. Following that, the state plans to concentrate next on people at high risk for clinical severity and high risk of exposure. That group includes residents in long-term care settings, people over 65, and staff of congregate living settings, for example, migrant farm camps, jails and prisons, and homeless shelters. Anyone with two or more chronic conditions identified by the CDC to be high risk for COVID complications. Phase three of the plan focuses on workers in industries critical to the functioning of the society and students. Phase four of the plan is the remaining population. The state notes in its report that historically marginalized populations are represented in the early phase prioritization groups and says subsequent phases will target lower risk populations and have more of a focus on decreasing transmission through the populations. And also on the healthcare front, under the heading of supply issues, comes the article, Why Plasma Shortage Has Local Drug Makers Worried. Around the country, thousands of patients rely on therapeutics created using donated plasma, But with the pandemic disrupting vital supply lines, drug makers say donations are more critical than ever. With the lockdowns related to COVID-19 came both a less mobilized population and less people interested in the prospect of entering a medical-related setting, both factors that negatively affected people going to the donation centers that are critical for the supply of plasma. Two of the biggest, including CSL and Grifols, have both reported slowdowns in their collection, with CSL reporting a 25% drop in the 3 months through June this year, and Grifols projecting a 10% drop in overall availability compared to last year. That tightening supply line has drug makers and patients that rely on plasma worried. One of those is Bioproduct Laboratory, a UK-based biotechnology company that calls Durham its U.S. headquarters and produces three plasma-based therapeutics for a range of diseases. Bob Rosilli, the company's U.S. president, says they're already receiving less plasma than they had planned to, adding, "We had forecasted, and we would like to be collecting more plasma than we can, but the pandemic is having an impact on the volume of collections. That's important for us to factor into the equation when creating therapies that rely on plasma." Next, we turn the page from healthcare to the real estate page. And under the heading Commercial Real Estate comes the article, Bandwidth Unveils Plans for New Corporate HQ. After months of planning and preparation, Raleigh-based Bandwidth and the development team behind the project have unveiled plans for the company's new headquarters campus in Raleigh, announced earlier this year. This week, developers Capital Broadcasting Company and East West Partners filed site plans with the city for the project, calling for an initial phase of 450,000 square feet of new space across two five-story buildings. The new campus will feature room for the company's 700-plus existing employees, plus the additional 1,165 positions currently being filled as part of the Jobs Development Investment Grants awarded by state and local entities. Bandwidth has been homegrown in the Triangle for nearly 20 years. We're excited to put our roots down further in the rich soil of this community with the help of two world-class developers in Michael and Lee, the State of North Carolina, the North Carolina Department of Agriculture, Wake County, and the City of Raleigh, says David Morgan, CEO of Bandwidth. The company announced the new campus earlier this year when the state's Economic Investment Committee approved a Job Development Investment Act grant that includes potential reimbursements to the company of up to $32.2 million over 12 years. The project is situated on 40 acres at the corner of Edwards Mill and Reedy Creek Roads. The company agreed to buy the land from the state for $30 million. And amenities at the headquarters will include a full-service cafe, a Montessori school, a fitness facility with indoor and outdoor courts, a special purpose event, barn and amphitheater, and an athletic field. The company's plan to break ground in 2021 and deliver the project in 2023. Bandwidth also has plans for an additional 350,000 square feet in future phases. Gensler is the architect on the project. Davis Moore Advisors of Raleigh is representing Bandwidth from procurement through completion of the landmark development, according to a release. And under the heading of retailing comes the article, Site of Historic Durham Brick Factory to See New Life. The site of a historic brick factory in Durham has found new life as a retail and entertainment destination. Raleigh real estate firm CityPlat has unveiled plans for Borden Brick, a new mini-entertainment complex at the site of the former Borden Brick and Tile Company factory in downtown Durham. The project is situated at 704 and 706 Ramsour Road at the corner with Fayetteville Street and just off the Durham Freeway. We're totally excited for this project, and we're excited to bring a project that complements Durham, said Gaurav Patel, Senior Advisor at CityPlat. We're open and looking to evaluate anyone looking to be in the space. No tenants have been announced for the space, but Patel said that the project plans to feature a taqueria, coffee shop, ice cream parlor, and others. There will also be space available for a distillery, pizzeria, or another eclectic restaurant concept. CityPlat plans to begin construction on the project in the first quarter of next year and complete the project by the summer. And just in case you may be a little hungry, here's an article entitled Food and Lifestyle. The article is Austin Taco Spot announces the first North Carolina location in Midtown. A growing Texas taco chain has announced its first location in North Carolina with plans to open next year in Raleigh. Austin-based Torchy's Tacos said it will launch a location at Creekside Crossing in Midtown. The company, known for its signature street-style tacos, green chili queso, and freshly made margaritas, has signed on to space at 1110 Mercantile Drive, Suite 630, and plans to open in spring or summer of 2021. Torchy's Tacos founder, Mike Ripka, launched the concept in 2006 as a single food trailer, and today it has locations open in seven states across the country. Next, we turn to the executive voice in this week's TBJ, and this week's executive voice belongs to John Gordon. Lenovo, the Chinese tech giant with a dual headquarters in Morrisville, is preparing for the new normal by releasing a set of Think IoT smarter store solutions to help stores thrive in a post-COVID world. The firm calls it the future of shopping, and it's tapped John Gordon, president of its newly established Commercial Internet of Things business group, to lead the charge, pushing out a slew of services aimed at increasing store visits through targeted advertising and making locations safer with products such as those that identify potentially sick employees. Gordon calls it a digital transformation, bridging the gap between hardware and a connected world, and it's just a start, he says. Gordon came to the Triangle to launch the new business. It's Gordon's second stint in the region. He was initially here from 1998 to 2003, before his career took him to Austin, the Bay Area, and Boston. Now we're excited to be here, he says. I have to tell you, to me, the Triangle feels like Austin 20 years ago. Gordon didn't always set out to be in technology. As a child, he wanted to be a musician. Even though he started programming at age 10, he still never envisioned the career he would one day have. His undergraduate degree is in philosophy, which he admits is the opposite of where he ended up. But what Gordon always had was curiosity, and that's what philosophy majors and technologists have in common, he says. It's how does the world work? How do you make it better, he says. I think in technology, if you use that as your goal, you're always trying to figure out how can what we do make people's lives better, create more value for them, make things easier. It's the same big questions, just answering them more practically. Gordon says he never let the fact that he didn't have a technology degree stand in his way. I think one of the lessons I learned was to just throw yourself into fields and projects that are over your head, he says. Early on, I didn't feel like I was qualified. You learn and you get better. He says that to fill the technology jobs gap that's coming, high-tech firms will need to find curious thinkers, not just degree holders. Just assume that just because you didn't grow up and spend years in it that you can't start, he advises other philosophy majors looking for a career in tech. You can get to a meaningful level pretty quickly, and you always have a lifetime to improve. Today, his unit is less than 100 people, but the team's growing, and it can leverage the force of Lenovo's global headcount, he says. The value of an incubation team and a global leader is we can leverage the rest of the company. As he builds a business, Gordon says, he gets frequent advice from CEO Yan King Yang, a firm believer in taking bets. I get lots of advice from him, but I think one of his biggest is to listen to your customers, get in front of customers, and keep talking to them, he says. When you're trying to launch a new business, it can be easy to get sucked into internal discussions. In the meantime, like everyone else, Gordon's trying to survive the pandemic sanity intact. He's currently working from home, along with the vast majority of Lenovo's local operation, and he's parenting three kids in the midst of distance learning. I bribed them into learning coding and launching a company, he says. It's been really fun to see them doing something practical. Gordon's advice to other parents: take this time as an opportunity to introduce them to lots of different people. His kids are on conference calls asking for advice with experts, thanks to a few introductions. Next, we turn to an article in the series The Promise Of that Triangle Business Journal has been doing for several weeks now. And the article's entitled Man Plays Crucial Role Amid Pandemic. And the man they're talking about is Clarence Mann, who happens to be president of Vistribution. Unlike businesses that have been shut down due to the pandemic, COVID-19 has opened doors around the country for Vistribution. From movie studios in California to businesses up and down the East Coast, the Raleigh-based company has seen business increase by as much as 15% as they perform biohazard remediation, disinfection, and sanitizing services across a range of industries. We've done COVID remediation at numerous places, from job sites for contractors to the laundromats at prisons to Kevin Hart Studios, says Clarence Mann, president and owner of Vistribution. This business is almost a perfect fit with our services. We're not a janitorial service, but we go in with masks and uniforms, and the folks that work with us are all licensed to do hazardous removal. Confidentiality is a big part of COVID-19 cleanup, so hazmat teams from Vistribution have been working almost every night. Nobody wants people to know they had COVID-19 in the building because it could hurt their business, Mann notes. Adding the client roster at Vistribution includes city, state, and federal buildings and a range of public and private entities. They come back to the building in the morning and it's clean, and they get a certificate that it's been cleaned by a professional company with an engineering license, so they feel safe. While hazmat cleanup has been a large part of his business this year, Vistribution's biggest client is still NCDOT, which was the first client when Mann started the company in 2001. Vistribution has grown from being a demolition and abatement company for DOT to a consultant and pre-construction partner. The project underway currently with the NC Turnpike Authority is acquiring right-of-way properties on Highway 540 in the pre-construction phase. I think we're the only minority contractor on Highway 540 that has a direct contract with the Turnpike Authority. Our job is to do the initial negotiations, then do the appraisals and make the offer. After NCDOT buys a property, we start the environmental work to clean out the right-of-way so the contractor can put in the road, Mann says. This work requires that all Vistribution associates involved in the negotiations have a real estate license and helping current property owners feel positive about the transaction. This partnership works well for Mann's company and the state. Vistribution is a disadvantaged business enterprise known as a DBE, a disadvantaged business enterprise contractor who was selected through a public and competitive procurement process to work on the complete 540 project. They were selected as the prime contractor working on right-of-way acquisition for the R-2721B portion of the first phase of the project, says Dennis Jernigan, Director of Highway Operations for the North Carolina Turnpike Authority. There are a number of other companies supporting right-of-way activities. The first phase of complete 540 is expected to involve more than 100 design firms, pre-construction service firms, contractors, and subcontractors, with roughly $75 million in work committed to disadvantaged business enterprise firms. Beyond North Carolina, Vistribution has projects and offices in several states, including California, Florida, Massachusetts, Minnesota, and Virginia. Mann prides himself on the professionalism and work ethic of his entire team, as well as their longevity with the company. Many have been with him 10 or 15 years. We have some real smart folks, he requips, adding that most have college degrees and everyone in the field is required to have the professional license associated with the work they perform. His son, Clarence Jr., a licensed professional engineer with degrees in both civil and environmental engineering, serves as vice president. As for his training, Mann credits the years he spent on a Navy submarine. It was good duty, and I learned how to be responsible, how to have work ethics, and how to be someone you can count on. He's intent on passing along those traits and helping others, especially veterans and the unemployed, develop the skills and training to acquire jobs. About 3 years ago, Vistribution introduced a workforce development program to train workers. When the company can't find skilled labor, they hire people and pay for their education. We have a capacity shortage for workforce here in North Carolina, Mann says. He calls on all business owners to offer workforce development programs that will help train people. We need to keep our tax dollars here. If we bring companies from all over the world to do highway construction, they take those tax dollars back to their state. We need to be more diligent in making our workforce better so we can keep those dollars here and can grow North Carolina. I'm passionate about that and about working the people in our state, he says. Now, this week's cover story is on women in business. And heading up that list is Eliza Kraft Olander. And she has received the Lifetime Achievement Award as a philanthropist. When you ask Eliza Kraft Olander how she got involved in the world of philanthropy, the answer comes easy to her. The need to help her employees with child care. The seed was planted and my eyes were opened early to the needs of others, she said. This vision set Olander, who owned a series of restaurant franchises, on a mentoring and philanthropy path through her work with the YMCA and its We Build People program. Under the tutelage of Judy Brith, who served as the executive vice president of the YMCA of the Triangle, Olander helped children through education and care. Bright died in 2018, but she passed on her knowledge to Olander. As I grew, I realized that philanthropy is nothing short of planned giving over time. Money isn't the only way to give. Time is also a critical need, she says. Olander saw the need for time and money with the Frankie Lemon School and Development Center and the Triangle Wine and Food Experience. She says that giving over time is what raises communities, saves families, feeds the hungry, and in essence, create ways of people of all abilities to thrive. Raising money for the Frankie Lemon Center has helped the nonprofit every single year, with the funds coming from the annual Triangle Wine and Food Experience, previously known as the Triangle Wine Experience. The TWFE is the main fundraising arm for the school, which needs our communities to support now more than ever, Olander says. The school and event held its yearly gala in February this year, but moving forward, she says, will be difficult. Olander expects the event will be unable to gather in groups as it has in the past for its wine dinners and the big gala. We're planning a live stream celebration, including our wineries, restaurants, and supporters, she adds. Businesses have been crafty in 2020 to raise money, and Olander and the TWFE is no exception. Live and silent auction lots will continue, and people can bid on private dinner parties, California wine collections, and even Pappy Van Winkle bourbon bottles online. Today, it's not just the pandemic causing chaos with her nonprofit, but it has also hit Olander close to home. Her 92-year-old mother was recently hospitalized for a brief time. Having her back home and recuperating is beyond description, she says. All of this brings to the forefront the importance of time, whether it's hard or not. That, coupled with my partner and the many varied friendships I am lucky enough to enjoy, has sustained me. Adapting to what 2020 has brought to the U.S. and across the world can be challenging, and Olander says there has to be room for everyone to help out, especially with concerns over social and racial injustice. None of these issues can be made better overnight or with the effort of each of us to educate ourselves and truly understand the mechanics of what each person can do to affect change for the better. People need to find common ground and shared humanity, the way children often do. As she says, it's important to have the sense of imagination of a child. Now, there are about 24 additional women in business listed in this week's Triangle Business Journal, and there's a very nice article about each of them, and there's no way to read all of that. So I'm going to read all the names and offices and just a couple of bits about each of them. And the first is Terry Phillips, Chief Medical Affairs Officer with MERS Aesthetics. And there's 7 questions asked of each of these 24 people, and I'm going to read just a couple of their answers. So what's your professional goal 5 years from now? I will be leading the most successful global medical affairs aesthetics organization for MERS, with excellent professional and personal relationships, and will be actively mentoring my successor. I would also like to be utilizing my skills as a critical care physician to volunteer in healthcare settings locally and around the world. So another question was asked, what female business person or leader do you admire most? And her answer, former British Prime Minister Theresa May. No matter your political leanings, I admired her strength, courage, and consistency in the face of the Brexit issue. Next in our list of women in business is Justine Hollingshead, who happens to be the Chief of Staff and Assistant Vice Chancellor at NC State University. So, Justine was asked, what's your professional goal 5 years from now? 5 years from now, I will be at my 30 years of service with NC State University and the state. While retirement seems a logical choice, I suspect I will keep working in a role in higher education or a nonprofit organization. And when asked, what female business person or leader do you admire most? Her answer is, my friend and colleague, Angela Carraway. Angela is a small business owner and proud alumna of NC State University, a community organizer, and someone who gives back to everyone around her. And next we have Shirley Wong, who is Associate Medical Director at Pediatric Weight Management Program from WakeMed Health and Hospitals. And when asked Shirley what her professional goal is from 5 years from now, her answer is, I hope I can reach more families to be healthier in more creative ways. We currently have a team that provides support for families in so many different and fun ways in their communities, from cooking classes to our family fitness classes to teen personal training. I hope to provide more fun incentives, virtual exercise and cooking classes, and support groups for our patients and families in a way that is sustainable and accessible for our community. And when asked to name the female business person or leader she admires most, her answer, President Tsai Ing-wen, the first female president of Taiwan, who's led the country and one of the world's best responses to COVID-19. When the first infected person in Taiwan was discovered in January, she introduced 124 measures to block the spread without lockdowns. And the next person featured, the next woman in business featured, is Anuja Puruwit. Anuja happens to be the Vice President and Assistant General Counsel for RTI International. And when asked to name her professional goal 5 years from now, her answer is, I love my job at RTI and would like to continue doing what I'm doing now, supporting RTI and helping to solve some of the world's greatest and most complex challenges. And when asked to name what female business person or leader she admired most, her answer, I admire Melinda Gates greatly. She and her husband Bill have devoted vast amounts of their personal fortune to the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation to improve the quality of millions of people's lives around the world. Next is Georgina Dukes. Georgina is State Project Manager for Unite Us. Her professional goal 5 years from now? To to become a vice president at an innovative organization using healthcare to address social determinants of health, with an emphasis on health equity. I would also like to be an entrepreneur and own a trucking company that will provide jobs and stability for those who have been recently released from prison, headquartered in my hometown of Sumaneta, South Carolina. And when asked to name a business person she admired most, she named Raynell Stewart, a black female entrepreneur from New Orleans. She started from waiting tables and built a multi-million-dollar empire as a single mother before the age of 35. She used social media to gain the support of fans, and she created the makeup brand called The Crayon Case, which helps amateurs like myself get better with makeup application. And our next woman in business is Leanne Nance, Chief Operations Officer with Stewart. And when asked her professional goal 5 years from now, what I'm most proud over my career is I have lived my philosophy of leave it better than I found it. And all my leadership roles, beginning with working the McDonald's drive-up window at 17, my time in economic development roles at the Research Triangle Park Regional Partnership or in private industry, I found ways to improve the environment around me. In 5 years, I hope I will continue to make improvements, not only at Stewart, but also in the industry and for the Triangle. And when asked to name the female business person or leader she admires most, she gives two people, Brené Brown and Maya Angelou. Next, Shelley McFadder, who happens to be president of the Bridgepoint General Contracting. Her professional goal 5 years from now? I want to continue to excel at what we do now by always improving and keeping my clients and team happy. I want Bridgepoint to be a sought-after partner across the triangle. There's no magic revenue goal or employee count we're chasing. And when asked to name the female business person she admired most, her answer, I most admire Robin Thomas, the Executive Director of Engineering and Operations at Duke Health. She entered into a male-dominated role and has gained tremendous respect from everyone who works with her. She's approachable and treats her team like family while balancing a demanding job and being the mother of two young boys. Next is Jen Cortamanch. Cortamanch is the Vice President of Property Management and Financial Operations for the Tower Company. And when asked her professional goal 5 years from now, I'm hoping Tower Company will sell its asset again for the fifth time. During this time, I will be positioning myself as a thought leader with innovative ideas in the telecom industry. These efforts will be to achieve a C-level position as well as paid board positions. And when asked her most admired female business person, her answer, Noreen Allen. She's currently the CMO of Bandwidth, and we worked together when she headed up marketing at SpectraSite in the telecom space. She's brought companies public, driving revenue and branding along the way. Our next honoree for a woman in business is Susan Wasik, Organizational Development Manager at Transloc. When asked what her professional goal 5 years from now is, she answers, to continue my work in growing and developing high-functioning and high-performing teams, co-create successful new business adventures, and creatively continue to share the latest research and best practices in positive psychology and change management in the workplace to a wider audience. And when asked to name her most admired business person, she answers Sheryl Sandberg, Chief Operating Officer of Facebook, Sarah Blakely, founder of Spanx, and Alice Zuljani, an entrepreneur and brave businesswoman who happens to be my mother. Next is Olivia Scott, owner and president of Promotional Partners. When asked about her professional goal, she says, by 2025, we'll be 18 years strong and we will continue to layer in our agency services as an investment in our partner's brand management. And when asked to name her favorite female business person, I admire several local women, fellow TBJ women and business winners who are pioneers and leaders in their own industries. They offer sound advice and occasionally have time to gather socially as a group. Next, Ollie Zelmont, Director of Global Support for Channel Advisor. When asked about her professional goal in 5 years, my biggest goal is to take my global team to a new level of effectiveness and efficiency. We're implementing new platform technology this year for customer service management and knowledge content delivery. Our software is complex. I want to revolutionize the way our business helps customers succeed. And when asked to name her most admired female business person, the Alum sisters, two of whom are previous recipients of the TBJ Women in Business Award, Nita Afreen and Arshin Alum, embody the best of women leadership and our youth in this community. Next, Alicia Smith Dries, principal at United Restaurant Equipment Company. When asked about her professional goal in 5 years, her answer is, my goal is to have United Restaurant Equipment more mobile with improved ability for our employees to work from home or on the road and a stronger and more efficient web presence. And when asked to name the female business person she admires most, her answer is Maggie Kane. As executive director of A Place at the Table, Maggie has created a masterpiece on Harget Street and awakened people to the need for quality food for all, a strong community, and that every person has value. Maggie's amazing, endlessly inspiring, and I respect her immensely. Next, Christy Neistat, president and CEO of Raleigh Brewing Company and ABS Commercial. Professional goal 5 years from now, sustained and international growing in the brewing industry while retaining our reputation as being a quality manufacturer, as well as continue to invest in growth industries. And when asked what female business person she admires most, her answer is Van Ewer of the Angus Barn. Her commitment to brand management through authenticity and community outreach is admirable. Now, this list contains at least 12 more names, and I, in the sake of time, I'm going to have to just read off their names and their business. There's Shauna Lemon, who's co-managing shareholder at Stanek, Lemon Krauss, and Meeks, PA. Tammy Langston, Senior Vice President of Coastal Federal Credit Union. Heather Chandler, owner of Whole Brain Escape. Kim Shurrett, founder and CEO of Hope Brains. Sue Harnett, founder and president, Rewriting the Code. Alyssa Miller, Chief Human Resource Officer with IAT Insurance Group. Rohini Ganesan, Director of Application and Engineering with RailLink. Yaj Wei, Vice President of Data Science, Infinia ML. Nina Lloyd, President and CEO of Opus Financial Advisors. Michelle Blackman, Program Coordinator for Wake Technical Community College. And Michelle Weathers, Executive Director of Carolina Buffet. Congratulations to all these excellent women business leaders. Last, we turn to the editor's notebook for this week's TBJ, and we hear the article, We May Be the Reason for This Anemic Economic Recovery. It's hard to believe anyone can even think about a growing economy during a raging pandemic that's crashing into our everyday lives and creating massive health, economic, and social havoc. Now we have the numbers to prove why it's the American consumer who alone can get us out of this economic funk. A recent research report from Compraer Acciones shows personal savings in the U.S. have ballooned to 17.8% by July, a number only eclipsed by 33.7% in April, when literally everything was closed and everyone was ordered to stay home. So what happens when the dollar doesn't change hands? The money gets mothballed. In April, deposits in U.S. banks grew by $865 billion, according to the FDIC. that money typically moves within our communities in bars, restaurants, boutiques, car lots, hair salons, and everything in between. With the dollar stagnant and most citizens wary of the virus, people are saving more money. That's actually a good thing in normal times. Historically, the U.S. has had one of the lowest savings rates in the world. We all know who we are. Money burns through our pockets. The slowdown in consumer spending is not only damaging the consumer-facing economy, but the downstream effect is now being felt across the industries one would think could benefit, such as banks. Banks are posting some crazy good financials this quarter, but if one looks under the hood, it's temporary. Banks primarily make money by issuing loans, and loan activity is down across the board. Not only that, if the pandemic economy remains lethargic, their loan portfolios have to be covered with much larger loan loss reserves in the coming months. But when it comes to deposit, thanks to you and me, banks are roaring, meaning they have the means to make loans like never before, but have decided to be on the sidelines and watch their clients draw out their lines of credit. An analysis from Y Charts shows total bank deposits in the first quarter amounted to a whopping $15.78 trillion. That's up about 9% from a quarter ago. 66% of the gains went to the top 25 banks by assets. Remember all the talk about some banks becoming just too big to fail? Should we ask our lawmakers today to give us a report on how this has been resolved since the Great Recession? It's not news that the consumers are the backbone of the U.S. economy, or frankly, the world economy. No one spends like we do. But for us to spend, we need to be secure, safe, and comfortable. And I'm not sure how we feel any of those right now. Maybe holiday shopping can save us all. So if you want to see the first signs of a full-blown recovery, watch for the consumer spending numbers. If people start spending, that means they're getting out and about, and the stores and other establishments and businesses are beginning to open up. For that confidence to happen right now, only one thing needs to happen, and that's controlling the spread of the virus. Well, that music means we've run out of time for today's episode of the Triangle Business Journal. I hope you enjoyed it. Be sure to listen next time. I'm Alton Banks, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Today's program is generously underwritten by Brian Lee Funeral Homes, located in Raleigh, Garner, and Anger. They can be reached at 919-832-8225. So if you have comments or questions, call us, 919-832-5138. So long till next time.